I want to thank Carter for reminding me that blessed is the name of the Lord. Glory to the name of the Lord, for holy is the name of our Lord. Just carrying on from Ike's reading earlier, he read from 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And even with the large print Bible my family got me for Father's Day, I still need these. But carrying on from where he read in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, I'll carry on from verse 19. Do not put out the Spirit's fire. Do not treat prophecies with contempt. Test everything. Hold on to the good and avoid every kind of evil. Let's pray. Lord, this morning, you've challenged me to stand up here and deliver the message that you laid upon my heart. And I just asked this morning, anything that I might say that is not of you would not take root. That only your words would be heard this morning. And that the people who leave here would leave here encouraged by you. For I pray in your precious name. Amen. So getting ready for this message, I was reading in the book of Judges. And I picked up my son and my daughter and my niece from Pembina Valley Bible Camp yesterday. And my son says to me, "Yeah, Dad, I was reading Judges this week." I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And then I thought about it again. I thought, not so sure I'm happy about my 13-year-old son reading through the book of Judges, because a lot of the book of Judges should actually be R-rated. But I'm sure the Lord can use that. I don't know about you, but the book of Judges seems like a very dark time in the history of God's people. Just to set the stage for the period of Judges, I'll read to you from Judges chapter 2, verses 8 to 23. So if you want to follow along, it's Judges 2, 8 to 23, starting at verse 8. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him in the land of his inheritance at Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Gaash. After that whole generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation grew up, who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of Egypt. They provoked the Lord to anger because they forsook him and served Baal and the Ashtoreth. In his anger against Israel, the Lord handed them over to raiders who plundered them. He sold them to their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. Whenever Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress. Then the Lord raised up judges, who saved them out of the hands of these raiders. Yet they would not listen to their judges, but prostituted themselves to other gods and worshipped them. Unlike their fathers, they quickly turned from the way in which their fathers had walked, the way of obedience to the Lord's commands. Whenever the Lord raised up a judge for them, he was with the judge and saved them out of the hands of their enemies as long as the judge lived. For the Lord had compassion on them as they groaned under those who oppressed and afflicted them. But when the judge died, the people returned to ways even more corrupt than those of their fathers, following other gods and serving and worshiping them. They refused to give up their evil practices and stubborn ways. Therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and said, "Because this nation has violated the covenant that I laid down for their forefathers and has not listened to me, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations Joshua left when he died. I will use them to test Israel and see whether they will keep the way of the Lord and walk in it as their forefathers did. The Lord had allowed those nations to remain. He did not drive them out at once by giving them into the hands of Joshua." So from Judges 3 through Judges 16, we can see the Israelites go through a series of cycles of sinning, worshiping idols, being punished, crying out for help, being rescued by a judge sent from God, obeying God for a while, and then falling back into idolatry to repeat the cycle all over again. At various times they were conquered by Syria, Moab, Canaan, Midian, Ammon, and Philistia. These people were left by God to test Israel, as we can read again in Judges 3 verse 4, where it says, "They were left to test the Israelites to see whether they would obey the Lord's commands, which he had given their forefathers through Moses." This week I was watching the news one night when I should have been working on this message, and I heard that Ahmed Wali Karzai had been assassinated. He was the half-brother to Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan. He was allegedly lured into a safe room where he was shot in the head and chest at point-blank range by a man in his own security detail who was subsequently shot by the other bodyguards. Sorry, that's pretty gruesome. And when I finally disciplined myself and got back to work, prior to that I was thinking how things are going from bad to worse in the world, and I disciplined myself to get back to work, and I opened my Bible, and there I read in Judges 3, 12 to 30, how Judge Ehud tricked his opponent into a private conference behind closed doors, plunged a knife into the king's belly, and kills him. Things haven't changed too much after all. If you're not familiar with the book of Judges, then at this point you could be thinking that I'm highlighting some of the nastier stuff to sensationalize my message. And I assure you, nothing can be farther from the truth. I actually steered pretty clear of the nastier stuff, as we call it, and tried to keep this a family-friendly message. But if you read the book of Judges and the depravity that's described there, in the words of my son, I wonder what some of that stuff is doing in the Bible. The one verse in Judges that I think sums up this period in Israel's history quite well is the very last verse in the book of Judges. That's chapter 21, verse 25. It says, "In those days Israel had no king. Everyone did as he saw fit." This is just an observation, but I see a very strong correlation between that statement and what I observe going on in our world today. Everyone is their own authority on and acts on their own opinion of right and wrong. I've heard the men and women mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, and Isaac read a few of them this morning. They're referred to as heroes of the faith. When I read through that list, I'm sometimes surprised by some of the men and women I find mentioned there. From the title of my message in the bulletin, you can tell who I'm going to talk about today, but there are others that I find similarly surprising to see them listed there. So, Samson. Samson. When I was a kid, we had this illustrated Bible storybook. And that book told the story of Samson, among others, but that was the one. What I remember about that story was Samson's strength. He was strong. No, I mean, he was really strong. I was really impressed by that. And to be honest, I completely missed the point of the story of Samson. I can't even tell you when I finally got it. When it dawned on me that Samson was at least as weak as he was strong. That God used his weaknesses just as much as his strength to accomplish his purpose. Now, I was tempted to spend 10 minutes reading to you the story of Samson, just as it's accounted in Judges from 13 through 16, because that takes 10 minutes. That translates into 10 minutes of message that I don't need to write. But in the end, I opted to just give some highlights or lowlights. So here goes. Samson was born to the tribe of Dan, to Manoah and his wife, who is not named. He was a Nazarite from birth, which meant that he was to be set apart to God. His birth was foretold to his parents, as was his purpose, which was to begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. This Nazarite vow meant that he could have no fermented drink, he could not come in contact with a dead body, and no razor could be used on his head. There were probably some other aspects to this Nazirite vow that I'm not aware of, but those were the main ones. So I will read from Judges 13:24 to 14, verse 7. Judges 13, verse 24. The woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. He grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to stir him while he was at Mahane Dan, between Zorah and Eshtaol. Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, "I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife?" But Samson said to his father, "Get her for me. She's the right one for me." His parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring toward them. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands, as he might have torn a young goat. But he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her. I think this is actually the first point at which we can see God using Samson's weakness to accomplish his will. Samson had a weakness for the ladies, and here we see him demanding that his father get him the one he wants, which is an indicator of one of his other weaknesses, his willfulness. He's behaving a little bit like a spoiled child, kind of demanding something that he wants. Let's carry on, Judges 14:8 through 15. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. When he rejoined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them that he had taken the honey from the lion's carcass. Now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast there, as was customary for bridegrooms. When he appeared, he was given 30 companions. "Let me tell you a riddle," Samson said to them. "If you can give me the answer within the 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes." "Tell us your riddle," they said. "Let's hear it." He replied, "Out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet." For 3 days, they could not give the answer. So on the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, "Coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to rob us?" Now Samson picks a wife for himself from among the Philistines, which was something that God was opposed to, mainly because it led to the Israelites worshiping their gods, which of course he had strictly forbidden. But God was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, so he needed to get Samson noticed. Samson challenges his wedding companions to solve a riddle about his adventures with the lion and the honey, which of course they couldn't possibly do. There'd be no way they could guess that. His wedding companions can't solve the riddle, like we knew they couldn't, so they resort to extortion and threats. His wife is afraid, and with good reason. So she convinces Samson to tell her the meaning of his riddle. She temporarily saves herself by telling them the meaning of his riddle, and they in turn explain it to Samson before the deadline. This, of course, means that he loses the bet, and that makes him angry, which, coincidentally, is another one of his weaknesses. If we read Judges 14, verse 19, "Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. He went down to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, he went up to his father's house." After his companions solve the riddle and he realizes he's being betrayed, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him in power. And he goes out and kills 30 men at Ashkelon. And he takes their belongings to repay his gambling debt. But he goes home still burning with anger. I point this out because the Spirit of the Lord coming upon him affected his physical strength, but it didn't seem to improve his self-control. At this point, I think the Philistines are beginning to notice him. At the end of chapter 14 and the beginning of chapter 15, we read how his wife is given away to his best man, which apparently he doesn't know. And after he cools down, he goes back to visit her. He gets turned away at the door by her father with the offer of her younger sister. I assume he refuses, and then he decides that he will get even by catching 300 foxes, tying them tail to tail in pairs, fastening a torch to each pair of tails, lighting the torches, and letting the foxes loose in the grain fields, orchards, and vineyards of the Philistines. This act reveals another of his weaknesses. He's vindictive. I'm pretty certain now that some of the Philistines have noticed him. Of course, the Philistines aren't going to let that go unpunished, so they burn Samson's wife, or his ex-wife, and her father to death, which we read in Judges 15, 6-8, along with Samson's response. Judges 15, 6-8. When the Philistines asked who did this, they were told, Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his friend. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, since you've acted like this, I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. And then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam. Now they've noticed. Doesn't say how many men he killed, but it must have been quite a few. Because this time, he gets the attention of the Philistine rulers, or at least someone in authority, because enough of them head up to Judah and camp out near Lehi to make the men of Judah afraid. There's enough of them there that the men of Judah are afraid. So the men of Judah go ask the Philistines what they want. And guess what? Yeah, they want vengeance. I'm beginning to see a pattern here. They want Samson. So 3,000 men of Judah go see Samson in the cave where he's holed up. And they convince him to surrender to them so that they can turn him over to the Philistines. Someone should have warned the Philistines that in life you should be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. And get it they did. Samson allows himself to be bound with two new ropes and taken up to Lehi to be turned over to the Philistines. Before he gets all the way there, the Philistines come toward him shouting, and once again the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him in power. He snatches up the fresh jawbone of a donkey and kills 1,000 men. By my count, that is the second time he violates his Nazarite vow by touching something unclean. The first time, when he scoops the honey out of the lion's carcass with his hand, and the second time, when he grabs the fresh jawbone of a donkey. And that's not counting being on a battlefield with 1,000 dead bodies or any of the other dead that he himself has generated. So we fast forward now to Samson and Delilah. She gets bribed by the Philistine rulers to find out the secret to his great strength and then betray him. So she tries to get the secret out of him. He tells her 3 different lies about the secret to his great strength and gets awakened by attempts to capture him on all 3 occasions. Of course, they weren't the real secret, so he easily avoids capture. Bear in mind, he's got some previous experience with betrayal at the hands of a woman. Still, after these 3 attempts to capture him, he still tells her the true secret to his strength, and as a result, she cuts off his hair and he gets captured. the Philistines gouge out his eyes and humiliate him by putting him to menial labor, grinding flour. Samson must have been their prisoner for some time, because Judges 16, verse 22 says, "But the hair on his head began to grow after it had been shaved." So to celebrate the capture of Samson, the Philistines decide to have a large gathering where they would perform a sacrifice to their God for delivering him into their hands. So a bunch of them, including all the rulers, get together at Gaza and bring him out to perform for them, an attempt to further humiliate him. The structure that they were gathered in was very large, because we read about that about 3,000 men and women were on the roof watching him perform. This temple was supported by central pillars, and Samson asks the servant who's holding his hand to lead him to where he can feel these pillars so that he can lean against them. And we read the account of what happens next in Judges 16, verses 28 to 30. Verse 28. "Then Samson prayed to the Lord, 'O sovereign Lord, remember me. O God, please strengthen me just once more. And let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes.' Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, 'Let me die with the Philistines.' Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived." Samson's prayer holds the answer to my question in the bulletin, "Why Samson?" Or, as I have it worded here, "Why would Samson be included in the Hall of Faith?" Part of the answer is, when he prays, he uses the word sovereign. Now, the word sovereign means supreme in power or authority. He finally recognizes where his strength comes from. Samson asks his sovereign Lord for strength one more time. I find it interesting that Samson doesn't ask for strength to accomplish God's will. He asks for strength to take revenge on the Philistines for taking his eyes. But even though his motives are less than pure, God gives him his desire and grants him his strength. Second part of the answer: he recognizes that God is the source of his strength, but he also believes God. He doesn't just ask and then stand back and wait. He asks and then he acts. He puts his hands on the pillars and begins to push. He doesn't ask to be spared in the process. He's willing to give it his all, and he does. I don't believe that his cry of "Let me die with the Philistines" is so much him saying that he doesn't want to live anymore, as it is that he is willing to die to accomplish this thing that God is empowering him to do. He's committed now, fully and finally. Samson killed all the rulers of the Philistines with his final act. Or maybe I should say, God killed all the rulers of the Philistines with Samson's final act. Because let's face it, what are the chances of no one surviving that kind of a collapse? Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines, and he was the very last of the judges, according to the passages that I have anyway. His final act brought down the rulers of the Philistines, and it fulfilled the purpose of his life as it was foretold by the angel of the Lord in Judges 13, verse 5, and it ushered in the period of the kings. In summary, I'd just like to read my Bible commentary about Samson. It is sad to be remembered for what might have been. Samson had tremendous potential. Not many people have started life with credentials like his. Born as a result of God's plan in the lives of Manoah and his wife, Samson was to do a great work for God, to begin the deliverance of Israel from the hands of the Philistines. To help him accomplish God's plan, he was given enormous physical strength. Because Samson wasted his strength on practical jokes and getting out of scrapes, and because he eventually gave it up altogether to satisfy the woman he loved, we tend to see him as a failure. We remember him as the judge in Israel who spent his last days grinding grain in an enemy prison, and we say, what wasted potential. Yes, Samson wasted his life. He could have strengthened his nation. He could have returned his people to the worship of God. He could have wiped out the Philistines altogether. But even though he did none of those things, Samson still accomplished the purpose announced by the angel who visited his parents before his birth. In his final act, Samson began the rescue to rescue Israel from the Philistines. Interestingly, the New Testament does not mention Samson's failures or his heroic feats of strength. In Hebrews, he is simply listed with others who, through faith, conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised. And in other ways, were given superhuman aid. In the end, Samson recognized his dependence on God. When he died, God turned his failures and defeats into victory. Samson's story teaches us that it's never too late to start over. However badly we may have failed in the past, today is not too late to put our complete trust in God.